A disturbing week of violence as a firefighter paramedic is stabbed to death while transporting a patient by ambulance. Big changes now underway at the Nelson. Another week, another round of protests, this time over big data centers. And speaking of big tech companies, are Amazon drone deliveries finally coming to Kansas City? Plus, the Missouri Supreme Court unanimously upholds the state's new minimum wage law, but not so fast. In Jeff City, lawmakers still working to kill off the measure. And hold the front page, is it finally happening?
NPR and PBS have increasingly become radical left-wing echo chambers.
As eliminating federal funding for public broadcasting moves from talk to action this week, our CEO joins us to connect the dots on what it all means for us right here at Kansas City PBS.
I'll spend all of my time doing everything I can to ensure you guys never get another dollar of taxpayer funding. This is complete garbage.
Week in Review is made possible through the generous support of Dave and Jamie Cummings, Bob and Marlise Gourley, the Courtney S. Turner Charitable Trust, John H. Mize, and Bank of America N.A. co-trustees. The Francis Family Foundation, through the discretionary fund of David and Janice Francis. And by viewers like you. Thank you.
Hello and welcome. I'm Nick Haynes, and we're glad to have you with us on our weekly journey through the week's most impactful, confusing, and downright head-scratching local news stories. Hopping on board the Week in Review bus this week from the anchor desk at KNBC 9 News, Chris Ketz. Former Star reporter and editorial writer Dave Helling. From our Metro's newest newspaper, Next Page KC, Eric Wesson. And tracking the region's top political stories for KCUR News, Brian Ellison. Now, a lot of finger-pointing this week over how a paramedic with the Kansas City Fire Department could be stabbed to death while transporting a patient by ambulance. 29-year-old Graham Hoffman died of a knife wound to the heart, but a blame game is underway on how it could happen in the first place. The patient Hoffman was transporting had just posted bond after assaulting a police officer just days before. Eric, we keep hearing from the mayor and our newly elected prosecutor that there's a new get tough attitude about crime in the city. If that's the case, what went wrong in this case?
Still trying to figure out how she was able to bond out. Mental health issues appear to be unaddressed. There was no bed space available. I think that was one of the things that they talked about with this recent tax that they passed. But what would you do otherwise? You know, we got mental health facilities around here. Why wasn't she in one of them? So there's a lot of unanswered questions with this.
And a lot of implications, and a lot of that was exposed this week on KABC. I thought you did a great job looking at a lot of different angles here that I never actually considered. The experts are now saying we may need to have self-defense classes for paramedics and ambulance drivers.
I think this tragedy has opened the eyes of a lot of people in town to the dangers that firefighter paramedics face every single day, and not just here, but everywhere. I've had paramedics come up to me and say, we ought to have protective vests like police officers. Now, I hope it begins a discussion about what to do to better protect these people in what they do. And it happens all over the city. It's not just one part of town. It's all over.
This was the story that got all of the attention this week, and rightfully so. But it was just the latest murder in what was a very deadly week, Dave. We're now, the official homicide count as we sit here is 50. That's 13% higher than last year. So for all those press conferences, announcements, all of the talk of collaborations, we're not making progress?
No, and we haven't made progress in many years. The politician is a fool who says, hey, we can solve this. It's going to take years and years of concentrated effort.
You recently were on the show talking about crime, and you said we were spending money and resources in the wrong direction, and that really irked our longtime viewer, Dick, who says, okay, it's easy to point the finger at that. Where should that money be spent? Where should those resources be spent if we're trying to fix this problem?
With viable programs, you keep giving the same people the same money, you keep getting the same results. Here's one of the things that one of my confidential informants from the police department told me. They're getting ready to get new uniforms. They're going to spend $1 million on uniforms. This police department has one of the largest budgets in the country, not just the state of Missouri, in the country. Where's all that money going?
Big changes are now underway at Kansas City's largest museum, the Nelson, announcing the winner of its international design competition to rethink the entire space and make it more approachable to a new generation of visitors. It's picked a New York architecture theater firm that's promising a massive new Westwood expansion with spaces for events, performances, and eating areas. The last big expansion at the Nelson was 18 years ago when the block building opened. Some called it a monstrosity that destroyed the museum's classical look. How is this design being viewed, Brian?
Well, some people may have called that at the block building that at the time. That has not proven to be the long-term judgment. People now look at that building and think that that's an integral part of the museum.
Just like they do with the shuttlecocks, which they hated also.
That's right. And not only because it provided necessary space for galleries, but because they like the way it looks. It has contributed to the architectural scene of the community. So I think, there were six designs considered. Some were certainly viewed more favorably than others. Julian Sagasa-Goitia has spoken of that in the past week, saying, "We heard you," sort of nodding toward the fact that some of them were very unpopular. But this design is seen as a little more symmetrical. It preserves the great lawn of the museum. And folks think it's going to be a positive change.
If you went into the museum right now, it might take you a month to get to see everything. I mean, it really is that absolutely humongous. Why do they need more space to do some of these things?
Listen, I think one of Kansas City's crown jewels just got bigger and better. And I think one of the more important things about this particular story is we're not talking about public money.
Yes. That is interesting, because at a time when everybody wants money for big projects, they're going to fund this entirely by private donations?
Yeah, there is money available for the arts in Kansas City, always has been. I think one of the problems with the original hall installation, which is the lenses, if you will, that were built 18 years ago, is that the artist's conceptions turned out to be very different from what eventually happened there. The lenses, as you know, the artists conceived them, were very rounded and had no seams, and they turned out to be a little different from that. And I think particularly because they're so attractive at night, that Brian is right, the opinion has changed. This addition will balance that campus. It's a beautiful part of Kansas City, that area, and the use that people make of it just to come out and throw a blanket down and have a picnic is profound and important. And I think by putting more of their collection on display, Nick, you will invite people to go in for an hour and look at something and then come back and maybe go back the next Sunday or the next weekend or maybe spend an evening at the Nelson rather than think, gosh, I have to see everything in this building because I'm going down once a year, and that may be involved here as well.
You know, I live just a couple blocks from the Nelson, Nick, and I am amazed at the number of events weekend after weekend after weekend that are just packing that place.
Yeah,
Kirkwood Hall is full of people for Chinese New Year, for Day of the Dead celebrations, and the museum offers all of that space free of charge, maintains the grass, the lawn, free of charge for the use of the community. I think this is actually worth celebrating, and it does require the community to say, maybe we have to adapt to some change from time to time, but that can be an okay thing.
Now, if only private companies could expand without asking for taxpayer help, plans to build a new mega data center in Kansas City are getting a thumbs down from environmental activists this week. Protesters disrupted a Port KC meeting just as the agency is set to vote on giving Google a 25-year tax break and $10 billion in bonds to construct a data center campus in North Kansas City.
We're going to tell them that this ain't right.
Northland teacher Sky Mart says he's concerned data centers don't pay sales tax in Missouri, and therefore schools miss out on the revenue that comes from $10 billion worth of equipment.
The whole tax situation as a whole makes me feel very upset.
You know, Chris, I have to acknowledge that I have actually been amazed that the lack of public pushback about these data centers in Kansas City. When you pick up a newspaper in any other city where they're happening, everybody is tearing their hair out about them. Was this the most visible public disruption, public concerns expressed about these data centers?
In quite a while, I think, quite frankly. And there's the larger question, certainly, of are taxpayers getting their money's worth giving all of these companies and concerns the kind of breaks that they're getting? This has been a discussion that's been going on at this table for an awfully long time. This is the latest addition. There's some valid questions being asked.
And they hire very, very few people. They're huge, but they have
construction jobs, but not permanent jobs.
I did see that Governor Laura Kelly this week signed into law these new huge tax breaks also for big mega data centers to come over to the Kansas side from a governor who's already complaining about shortages of water in Kansas. And don't these facilities guzzle electricity and water?
Amazingly so. The companies involved are all preparing for artificial intelligence, which requires to work enormous racks of computers that need enormous amounts of power, not only to run the computers and servers, but to cool the buildings. I mean, they get so hot because they're involved in calculations to such a large degree. So I don't, but, you know, I think there is always in these situations, Nick, a fear of being left behind, that somehow if Kansas City says no, yep, they'll go somewhere else, and then where were you, where were you? I think Kansas has some of that as well.
I think the poster child in Missouri got to be Cerner. We spent a lot of money. They got a lot of tax breaks. They were supposed to develop that area. And the only thing that you have now is, you know, you might have two or three things out there. But what were we led to believe was going to happen?
But that was the promise of more jobs than this would ever provide, because they may only require about 20 people to run the whole joint. I think that is a distinction.
And there were some clawbacks in the Cerner proposal that don't exist in these others.
Exactly.
You know, the other thing to keep in mind, Nick, is the Port Authority's role in all of this. And I've written for years about how the Port Authority can write very large checks with very little public input, kind of like the police board in a way, right, Eric, where you get all this money and yet you don't have to answer to taxpayers or voters at any level. And this is another example of that, and let's hope that the mayor and council sort of look at it and say, hey, maybe this is a decision for the council, elected council, and not for appointed members of the
Now speaking of big tech companies, are Amazon drone deliveries finally coming to Kansas City? The City Planning Commission has just approved an expansion of Amazon's same-day distribution center in South Kansas City to allow up to 4 launch pads for the commercial drones. We would be the biggest city in America to get them. They're currently being used in a couple of smaller towns in Arizona and Texas. If you're an Amazon Prime member, you can get same-day shipping on many items now. Chris, would you pay an extra $9.99 for delivery in an hour? Is that worth the convenience?
You know, I'm one of those. There's so much about this technology that I don't know and don't quite understand. Yeah, it's being used in College Station, Texas. Yeah, it's being used in the Phoenix area. I do know this. If you can fly a drone, and we're not talking about the drones that you buy your kid at Walmart to play with.
Absolutely.
These are heavy vehicles. These are 70, 80-pound vehicles flying around carrying packages. If you can fly a drone, if you've gone through the training and gone through the certification, that's a six-figure job, whether it's Amazon, Walmart, or whomever.
You know, Nick, last night I was thinking I would like some raspberry jam on my toast for breakfast. And I went on Amazon. I found I would have to wait until a 4 to 8 a.m. delivery window. But I thought, what if I want my toast at 3 a.m.? It's too bad we don't have drone delivery. And so now I am glad that we'll have that resolved.
People stealing packages off the porch is a major problem across the country. Is there any better signal that you have a package on your front porch than a huge drone buzzing overhead?
Now,
that's like a sign. Why don't put out a sign? Yeah, come get a package here. Right on the front.
They are also known to crash. And I was looking, Eric, through some of the news clippings from those towns that already have them in Texas and Arizona. And one of them really caught my eye about the noise complaints, and they were liking the sound to a group of flying chainsaws overhead.
Yeah.
Right. And one of the ones that I saw was about the wind shifted and packages being delivered at the next door neighbor's house and in the front yard instead of the porch because the house had been redesigned since they did the Google Maps with it. So the package was out in the people's front yard instead of on their porch. That could lead to what Dave was saying about people stealing it. But this technology, we got to watch it.
And I will say, though, you know, they could be eclipsed by Walmart, which is actually also trying to get into this community to do that in a big way. So there is competition. For the first time ever, by the way, Missouri workers are now guaranteed paid sick leave. It's the second part of a November ballot measure that also increased the minimum wage to $15 an hour. But it's unclear how long the new benefit will last. Missouri lawmakers are trying to kill the voter-passed law, citing business groups' concerns that it will shut down smaller employers. But time is running out on this year's legislative session. Lawmakers will adjourn on May 16th, that's not far away. Have lawmakers left it too late to stop it, Brian?
It's not too late, but it is getting close. A lot of depends on, first of all, whether there's any disagreement among the Republicans who hold the majority in both the House and the Senate, but also to what extent Democrats are willing to expend political capital. Will they filibuster this in the Missouri Senate? They have in the past filibustered efforts to undo the will of voters, which is what this represents. However, it's not clear where they will spend their political chips.
And it is worthwhile noting that the Missouri Supreme Court unanimously upheld this particular measure that was being challenged by business groups, saying you couldn't put two issues on the same ballot at the same time.
They said,
does that take the wind out of the sails of lawmakers?
No. I mean, first of all, they don't care what voters say or the Supreme Court says. They're going to do what they're going to do. But I do think that the fact that it has gone into effect, Nick, does change the political calculus in some ways, because you would, in essence, be taking away something that people have, not something that people are going to have.
Yeah.
And that changes a few things, I think.
Well, 4 years after construction began on the streetcar expansion down Main Street to the plaza, the disruption has become too much for at least one store. Effing Candles announced this week they're closing as sales dip more than 70%.
We went from booming online and in-person sales to absolute crickets.
Bertie Hansen and her husband are moving out. They're taking Effing Candle Company to a new location after seeing business sink 72% during the past 2 years. Hansen says the candle company couldn't afford to pay its employees anymore, and trouble outside is to blame.
Other cities have done long-term construction projects, and they had small businesses in mind. So it's very disappointing to be a resident, a small business owner, and to see other cities take care of their small businesses in Kansas City just push us away.
Chris, but isn't the streetcar line about to open? Couldn't they just hang on for a few more months?
Well, first of all, I love the name of this company, number one. And number two, I'm a little surprised that there haven't been more small businesses along that route in a similar situation who have said, listen, traffic has gone to nothing. We can't make it. We're moving out.
There have been a number of restaurants that have been pretty adversely affected, but I do think this is part of the city would say this is part of the cost of growth. This is part of how it works, and I do think that will become very valuable property here in a few months. I'm going to be surprised if another company doesn't move right in and make a significant profit.
And didn't we have the same complaints about businesses in the city market when the original streetcar was being built and businesses were closing? And I do think if you ask business owners in the city market now, they'd think the streetcar is kind of a plus for foot traffic and business.
They changed their tune once it opened. But do we know when it's going to open? I've never seen an actual definitive deadline to say we are now going to open it on blank date.
No.
I haven't seen one.
Yeah. I heard fall of this year.
At one point, it was late summer, early fall. I think it's been pushed back slightly into the...
Hopefully, before the World Cup comes
into town. And the reason for that, according to the transportation authorities, is it's because of the testing that is required. A lot of the tracks are ready to go, but there's a significant amount of federal and state testing that has to occur.
But it seems like it's taken forever to do that. I'm surprised a lot of those businesses have been able to hang in there. Because it's taken forever, it seems like, to do that.
Why isn't, Eric, City Hall showering this candle store with cash like they are the Sunfresh grocery store on Prospect? Did you see that story? Amid concerns that they may be forced to close soon, the city is providing nearly $1 million in taxpayer money to keep the doors open.
This ordinance is to keep it afloat after this. Last week, shoppers went to the store and they were greeted by empty shelves.
I did notice other businesses are also now saying, hey, where's our bailout? We're facing the same pain. Where's our money?
Right, and they probably should say that. But in this particular case, the city has been negligent with a lot of different things. There are some things in the contract that they had to do, safety around the shopping center. We went through there in August with the mayor for his photo op, and we pointed to holes in the fences in the area. Today in April, those holes are still there. So I think there's a difference. One, the city put money into it, invested into it. It should be successful, and they have done very little.
But can you see why other businesses, though, might be irked by this, that it seems like the city is picking winners and losers and they're going to bail out certain companies and not others?
Right, and other grocery stores. Although you can make a case that retail establishments at that corner are particularly challenging because of just the income level in the neighborhood and the need for those services in all parts of Kansas City. No one denies that. But anyone who suggests that Kansas City has not been supportive of 31st and Prospect, Linwood and Prospect, over the 25 or 30 years that I've been a reporter here isn't paying attention. They have spent tens of millions of dollars trying to make that corner work, and it doesn't work. And when it doesn't work, they come back and say, we need tens of millions of dollars.
But the city just couldn't say, okay, if you're not making it work, let's just pull the plug.
But then you got a food desert there, and you have all those elderly people that can't get to other grocery stores. And one of the reasons why you had it there was a food desert. Now, we spend 15 to 17 million a year on the Power and Light District. Mm-hmm. Nobody raises any sand about that. The Sprint, the T-Mobile, yeah. You know, they get money. So it's like, where do we stop?
All right. Well, it's not just the Catholic Church that's picking a new leader this week. Kansas City is getting ready to pick a new city manager after ousting Brian Platt. The city council hosted public interviews this week with the three finalists for the $208,000 a year job. In addition to acting city manager Kamiko Gilmore, the other finalists are assistant city manager Mario Vasquez and Pat Klein, the recently retired head of the aviation department. Was it just me, or was anybody else surprised that Pat Klein threw his hat in the ring for this? Does anybody retire anymore, Dave?
I retire, okay. Yes. Thank you very much. Pat Klein is an interesting choice. I mean, I think that his reputation during the problems with the airport early on was not good, but it was completed on time, on budget. He has experience in the city manager's office, so it's not quite the surprise it is. I don't think he's the favorite.
But I will say, though, we're also saying we are an international community. We're an international city, and yet we do a search without only internal candidates. Where were all these outsiders who could have come in to try and transform Kansas City?
Well, I think the hiring of Brian Platt probably had a lot to do with that. That was a much heralded nationwide search. It brought in outside candidates. A lot of people ended up very unhappy with the result. They also needed immediate interim leadership, which is how Kamiko Gilmore is currently the acting city manager. I think there's going to be a lot of consideration about this after the fact, but I think they're looking to fill the position quickly, and that leans toward an interim.
You had an inside source in the police department. What's your inside source at City Hall telling you about this?
They had 40 applicants.
Okay.
I think one of the things is it's only a 2.5-year job because the next council will come in.
If you want any more evidence that Quentin Lucas is a lame duck, this imbroglio is proof of it, because he's not dictating who the next city manager will be. The council is making its own decisions. He was unable to protect Brian Platt, who was his choice. Quentin Lucas, his term is coming to an end.
Chris and Eric, Brian and Dave, we love you. We love that you're here, but we're now hitting the eject buttons on your seats, okay?
Okay.
Because we're skipping our big story miss segment this week. I know, you're going to be horrified. So we can make room for our president, not Trump, but Cliff Keel, our CEO, who wants to address how the White House is now turning words into action and instructing Congress to zero out funding for us and all of public broadcasting.
NPR and PBS have increasingly become radical left-wing echo chambers for a narrow audience.
I don't even recognize the station anymore.
I'll spend all of my time doing everything I can to ensure you guys never get another dollar of taxpayer funding. This is complete garbage.
Cliff Keel, I like to think that this is a quality show, but the rest of what we do around here, complete garbage?
I don't think so, Nick. I would disagree with that.
Ever since I've been here, and that's been more than 20 years, there has been worry over public funding and whether it's going to go away. It never has. Why is this different in your mind?
It feels more serious. It feels the threat, I think, is very real. And we've been able to sort of beat back these threats in the past, and I'm hoping we can do that again.
For us, it's about $1.5 million, which, when we look at the entire budget, that's about 13%. What would be the most visible difference that viewers would see if that were to be wiped out?
We would certainly have to do a little bit less, and it would probably be just across the board. Does that mean a little bit less local programming, a few fewer documentary partnerships?
Let's cut to the chase, Cliff. Will I still have a job? Or does this become Kansas City Monthly in Review?
Well, we feel like an annual,
annual synopsis of what happened in Kansas City.
No, Nick, your show is beloved, of course. Okay, well. It will always be here. You know, I think we would do everything we can. I mean, I think the goal would be to limit the impact on our friends and our viewers and our supporters.
But we have corporate supporters, which we see in our underwriting messages. We have foundations that support us, and our big power source, of course, viewers like you, which we say on every program, and that really is important. But couldn't we just make up that money just as everybody else is tightening their belts?
I don't think there's a lot of room to go to those folks and say, hey, we need to put back $1.5 million. So we would have to really think through that. It would be tough, and I will add, if you look at smaller market stations, right, we're fortunate here that we have remedies. they would be challenged by the fact that their federal funding might be 40 or 50% of their budget.
Yeah, you said that about Warrensburg. You might be in Western Kansas. That might be more than half their budget comes from that federal funding. They don't have big corporate or foundation support. They may end up closing if that money were to go away.
I would hate to see that because we all contribute back into the funds that help create the national programs. And so that's another challenge in this when you look at it, Nick, and say, well, Kansas City would find a way to power through this, but what happens to smaller stations? And also, what happens to the funding that goes to help them make those national programs?
So fewer stations means that there may be less money for a Ken Burns, and he decides to take his documentaries out of PBS to go to Netflix, or there might not be a news hour any longer because we're also funding that program.
Heaven forbid, but yes, those are the kind of concerns you would have. Folks might say, yeah, just tighten your belt in Kansas City. Well, the problem is, I think about $100 million goes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting every year to PBS to help build that national schedule. So again, we can sort of gear up here locally and battle this cut if it happened. But again, I think there are some other things that would happen on the national level that where we wouldn't really be able to help overcome that.
We have right now 4 fundraisers a year on the air. Some people complain about those, but that helps make our work possible, including this show. Do we go from 4 to 8 fundraising sessions every year on our air?
Ideally not, Nick. I guess never say never, but the goal would be to not do that. We'd try to find other remedies, our major gift fundraising, maybe foundations. We'd certainly look at all of our friends in the community and hope to have them help us with that challenge. And that coupled with, I hate to say it, but probably a little bit of belt tightening, yes.
President and CEO of Kansas City PBS, Cliff Keel, wrapping up our week's news this week. By the way, I had a viewer send me this, which, you know, it's part of my sign-off. It says, keep calm and carry on. Do we need to change the sign-off to, quick, hit the panic button? Or can we still do our keep calm and carry on, Cliff?
Let's stick with keep calm and carry on. I love that. Nick, you do an amazing job. I'm honored to be able to be here and speak with you, and thank you for the time.
Well, thank you very much. I'm Nick Haynes from all of us here at Kansas City PBS. Be well, keep calm, and carry on.